Don't be afraid of the dark. Just relax and let the darkness fall over you.
Welcome to Afraidish, a podcast where we take a deep dive into the history and paranormal while enjoying some tasty adult beverages. From ghost sightings to hauntings, urban legends and cryptids, let's get weird and afraid-ish together. Welcome to episode 41. I'm Paul.
And I'm Ashley.
How have we been?
Tired.
Yep, I'm pretty exhausted.
Yeah.
Oh, man. These last few months have been kicking my ass.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Have we recorded?
Yeah.
Since you had COVID?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Ah, man. I feel a lot better, though.
Yeah?
Than I did before. I still have a cough since December.
Yeah.
That sucks. So, let's go ahead and get into this so we can go to bed.
Yes, please.
Because we always record on Saturday night and kind of late, and Ashley has work on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
It's a long day, which is great, but also I had a long day today, and I'm pooped.
Yeah. All right.
And you had a long day today, too.
I did.
Yeah.
All right, what are we drinking?
You are drinking a makeshift margarita.
Yeah, and then, well, for dinner, I had a margarita, too.
You had a green iguana at our local
Mexican restaurant.
Every Friday,
yep.
Saturday restaurant. I am drinking a strawberry lemonade Crystal Light because I don't feel like alcohol right now.
Nice.
But I'm high.
Nice. All right. Let's get started. Here are 5 fun facts about Victorian houses.
Five fun facts.
Number 1. Victorian homes were named after Queen Victoria's era, which lasted from 1837 to 1901.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, the style is evocative of that era. However, they are now nearly an interpretation of times before the Victorian era.
What's funny is they don't look anything like anything from before the Victorian era. That's the great thing about Victorian architecture.
Yeah.
Is it's so ubiquitous, but it was trying to be something else so hard.
They still look nice though. But...
Oh yeah, I love a Victorian.
Yeah. All right, number 2. In the 1800s, the Victorian mansion was famous among upper class people. The houses were often enormous, so they stood out among the other residences in the neighborhood.
Oh, yes.
Yep. Number 3. They often featured beautiful architecture and at least 2, but sometimes 3 floors. They often built Victorian homes of stone or wood, and towers, turrets, and gabled roofs were typical. Furthermore, they painted many Victorian era homes in vibrant hues, and the interior,
oh my God, yes.
Interior was just as odd as the outside.
No, but like I'm thinking about all the Victorian houses down in Eureka.
Oh man, yeah.
Oh, I love them so much.
They're so colorful and
yeah, I want them so bad.
So cute, yeah.
Or on Historic Walnut Street too. There's a few houses down on Walnut that I just drool over.
Yeah, there's a lot going up to the Crescent Hotel along that windy.
Well, yes, in Eureka, and also here in Springfield on Walnut Street.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
Got it. All right, number 4. For a grander 3-storied home, each story would have a set of rooms reserved for specific functions. The top floor typically housed the servants' quarters and the children's rooms with a nursery. The second floor would include the primary bedroom and the second bathroom. On the first floor, you'll find the drawing room or parlor, a receiving room for guests and visitors, the basement, cellar, or sometimes the back of the first floor would house the scullery where the cleaning would occur. This room would accommodate a big copper pot for boiling clothes and other cleaning equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Rooms would be closed off and only those guests who need to use them would be visible. The interior of the homes doesn't function for how we currently live today. Restored Victorian homes in house... Restored house. Restored Victorian house interiors will be opened more to account for our open plan and more interactive living. So yeah, it's pretty cool how when they renovate Victorian homes, they open them up like for modern use.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you would hope so.
Yeah.
I don't know too many people who want to do their laundry in a copper.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know.
Number 5. Some styles of Victorian houses include Queen Anne. These homes have an asymmetrical layout, a gabled roof, and a wraparound porch. They often have brightly colored designs on the interior and exterior.
I love them so much.
Yeah, those are nice.
They're my favorite.
I love a wraparound porch.
Yeah.
Italianate. Is it Italianate or Italianate?
I would say Italianate.
Okay.
But I'm not saying that that's correct.
Right. These buildings are generally lower and flatter and modeled after Italian Renaissance villas. This style is the least ornamental and decorated of the group.
I think there's one... in Springfield, on Sunshine?
I don't know. I'd have to see it.
I don't know for sure, but I think so. I've always thought it was trying to be Southwestern, but it could be Italianate.
Probably. There's Second Empire. These homes are much less common than the others because of their luxurious architectural features. Only those of the Victorian era upper class had access to this sub-style. It can be identified by its French mansard roof, square or rectangular shape, pavilions, dormer windows, and molded cornices. These houses are replicas of homes found in France during Napoleon III's reign.
What is it called again?
Second Empire.
Second Empire.
Yeah.
I've literally never heard of that as a architectural style.
Folk Victorian.
My favorite.
This style made the Victorian home within reach for working class American families. This is a modest take on the cherished Victorian style, built with cheaper materials, but still adorned with ornate details. The folk Victorian is the most common type of Victorian home in the U.S.
Yes, I love them. I Googled Second Empire style Victorian architecture, and I'm familiar with this style house. I just never knew that that's what it was called. Yeah. They're beautiful.
Yeah. I think they all are, yeah.
Yeah. They absolutely all are. But wow.
And my favorite, the Gothic Revival.
Yes.
True to its name, the Gothic Revival house style is distinguished from other Victorian styles by using Gothic windows with high arches, drawing inspiration from medieval architecture and the Romantic art movement. These homes have many gorgeous features, including pointed arches and windows, steep roofs, and ornate detailing.
Yes, they are beautiful.
Yeah. Now let's sit back and learn about the history of the historic Vail Mansion in Independence, Missouri. You can discover a distinctive Victorian mansion on a complete city block northeast of the Truman Presidential Library and Museum, and a mile north of Independence Square on Liberty Street. The Harvey M. Vale Mansion was built in 1881 in the Second Empire French Revival style, showcasing Vale's wealth through its opulent design. Asa B.B. Cross, a Kansas City architect, was responsible for the mansion's design. The three-story brick mansion facing east features a four-story tower with a cupola or dome. The walls are adorned with hand-pressed brick and limestone trim, while the height exceeds 100 feet.
Wow.
The slate roof with ornate wood trim and metal finials completes the mansion's striking appearance. Harvey Merrick Vale was born in Vermont in 1831 and later moved to New York with his family. He worked as a schoolteacher in various states, such as New York, Pennsylvania, and Mississippi, and saved his earnings to attend law school in Louisville, Kentucky. After graduation, he became a lawyer in Indianapolis as an ardent supporter of the Republican Party and Abraham Lincoln. Vale dedicated himself to the anti-slavery movement. Besides his legal practice, he contributed opinion pieces to the Indianapolis Journal and the Evening Standard. In 1859, Vale moved to Kansas City and opened a law office with J.J. Crandall, where he eventually married Sophia Cecilia Graham of New Orleans County, New York, in 1861. In the 1860s and 1870s, Vale amassed his wealth by financing the construction of the Erie Canal and operating the Star Mail Route from Independence, Missouri to Santa Fe, New Mexico. Following his successful business venture, Vale shifted his focus to practicing law and moved to Independence with his family by 1870. Alongside his legal work, he invested in real estate, particularly buying vast tracts of land in Independence and other areas.
Of course he did.
Yeah. Which he used to cultivate crops, orchards, vineyards, livestock, and dairy cattle. All in all, Vale accumulated more than 2,000 acres of agricultural land. That's a lot.
That's a fucking lot. Holy shit. You said 2,000? 2,000. It's
crazy.
Excessive.
The mansion was designed by Asa B.B. Cross and completed in 1881 at a cost of over $150,000, or around $4.5 million today. That is crazy.
Oh, to be rich!
Yeah. The construction was carried out by O.S. Street and with William M. Randall as the masonry contractor. The mansion was surrounded by elaborately landscaped grounds with fountains and gas lamps. There were also several outbuildings, including a stable, a greenhouse, a boathouse, and a pergola. Yeah. The property also featured a spring-fed lake to the north with an island accessible via a covered bridge. That would be so beautiful. Having your own little island out in a lake.
Oh my God.
A gazebo and bandstand nearby were perfect for relaxing and entertaining guests.
Oh, yes, because often when we have the family over, I think, you know, I wish we had a bandstand.
Yeah. The grounds were meticulously cared for with many types of trees, shrubs, and flowers. Two full-time gardeners were employed to maintain the property during the growing season. The inside of the residence was just as extravagant as the exterior. There were a total of 9 fireplaces throughout the 31-room house.
Jesus. 31 rooms and only 9 fireplaces?
Yeah,
some of them rooms are killed.
Yeah. Which featured exotic stonework such as Carrara marble and onyx. The black walnut front door and main staircase added to the luxurious feel, while the white pine interior wood was artificially grained to resemble more exotic woods.
The grained or green?
grained.
Okay. I thought you said green, artificially green.
Sorry.
And then to resemble more exotic woods. And I was like, that does not make sense.
No, they were
grained.
Grained.
Okay.
The main floor was divided by 12-foot-high pocket doors, and some ceilings were adorned with murals and frescoes.
Ooh.
The primary bedroom had a mural that served as a focal point. It depicted a woman reclining in a sheer lace bodice.
Bodice?
Bodice, yeah.
How's it spelled?
Bodice.
Okay.
I don't know what it is. Oh, okay.
I'm assuming they're meaning like a chemise type bodice. A bodice is usually like the upper part of a dress.
Kind of like a tight fitting, like a corset type thing?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Not all bodices are corsets, but I guess, well, not all corsets are bodices either. But you would wear a bodice over a corset.
Okay.
If in like in Victorian era, you right. definitely would wear a bodice over a corset. But if you're saying it's sheer and white, then I'm guessing it's probably like a shift or a chemise.
Okay.
I would have to see the fresco. If it's in the bedroom, why not have her in lingerie?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Like I said, it depicted a woman reclining in a sheer lace bodice wearing scanty clothes.
Okay.
The mural was initially painted as a nude figure, which caused a scandal during its unveiling. Yeah. Such a
they
scandal.
They put porn in their bedroom.
There's no shame in that.
Oh, holy Jesus.
This led
pearl
to...
pearl clutching.
This led to Mrs. Vale being alienated from the Independent Society circles.
Her private bedroom. Oh my God.
Yeah. The society considered the mural vulgar and inappropriate, even after it was repainted to clothe the figure.
What happens in a bedroom? Nothing in the Victorian era. Nothing happens in a bedroom.
Yeah. And it doesn't stay in the bedroom either. The house was built with all modern amenities, including indoor plumbing, served by a 6,000-gallon water tank.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Wonder how often they had to have that come filled, 6,000 gallons.
I don't know. That's a lot.
You'd still, like, it is a lot, but it's not a lot when you think about, like, how much water is required to run a household on a household our size on a day-to-day basis, right. Let alone a fucking mansion.
Right. A gas well on the property furnished fuel for heat and lights. The gasoliers in the two front parlors were initially commissioned for the White House during President Rutherford B. Hayes' term. However, they were damaged during transportation from Europe. Harvey purchased them to use in his home, and they have been converted to electric chandeliers.
Hmm.
In the early 1880s, Vale became famous for his involvement in the Star Route scandal. He was accused of violating contracts related to the Star Route mail lines and defrauding the government.
No, a rich man.
But guess what happens? Because he's rich.
He bails himself out. Pays off somebody and charges totally. Dropped.
Vale underwent two trials. The first in 1882 and the second in 1883. Despite the accusations, he was found not guilty in both trials.
Okay.
Yeah. Sophia Vale was believed to suffer from stomach cancer and died at home in February 1883 of a laudanum or morphine overdose while Harvey was away in Washington, D.C., Harvey never remarried and died in 1894. Harvey and Sophia are interred in a mausoleum in Woodlawn Cemetery built by Asa Cross to match the mansion.
Hmm.
It's pretty wild. The Vales had no children and thus left their estate to the Kansas City Ladies College on the condition that the college be renamed the Vail Institute. However, the college couldn't afford to maintain the mansion, so they sold its contents and livestock at an auction shortly after acquiring it. The extended Vail family was dissatisfied with the endowment and tried to challenge the will in court. They lost twice before settling the matter out of court on their third attempt. The entire estate settling process dragged on for over a decade.
Jesus Christ.
That's crazy. Carrie Mae Carroll Sprague eventually owned the mansion and its 33 acres. During her childhood, Carrie Mae's parents often visited the mansion where she used to accompany them. Carrie Mae was among the first women to graduate from the University of Missouri's law school and even had a law practice in Independence.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. The heirs of the mansion asked for her assistance in managing the estate, and she eventually contracted several individuals to help her operate the mansion as an inn, a sanitarium, and a nursing home.
Oh, my.
Carrie Mae also attempted to bottle and sell the spring water on the estate to the public through the PUR, or might sound like pure, but it's spelled P-U-R, water company.
Yeah, pure.
Pure.
Especially, not always, but sometimes it'll be like two little dots or like a line over the U.
Right.
Yeah.
Which was ahead of her time. Carrie Mae owned and lived in the mansion until she died in 1960. The Vail Mansion was at risk of being destroyed due to its poor condition. In 1960, Mary Wilfred DeWitt, who served as the president of the Jackson County Historical Society from 1861 to 63, and her husband, J. Roger, bought the building and the surrounding four-acre block for $60,000.
Jeez!
Yeah. Which is equivalent to about $621,782 today.
But they bought the whole block.
Yeah.
You can't buy a house for less than that, especially let alone that a whole fucking block.
Yeah. They bought it to prevent its demolition.
Good for them.
Although it was being used as a nursing home, the DeWitts made exterior renovations by replacing the roof and most of the exterior woodwork and repointing the exterior masonry walls. The restoration of the intricate...
Did you say repainting?
It says repointing.
It says your notes say...
Yeah, my notes say...
Do you think maybe you mistyped repainting the exterior? Repointing. I don't... Is that a thing? Am I being obtuse?
Repointing the exterior masonry walls.
Oh! Everything you need to know about repointing brick and how to do it.
Oh, okay.
Okie dokie then. Yeah.
So.
Construction pros, don't at me. I don't give a fuck about none of that shit.
So I guess they repointed the bricks.
Okay.
The restoration of the intricate woodwork and slate roof was entrusted to Waldemar R. Kurok. In 1969, Mrs. DeWitt succeeded in placing the mansion on the National Registry of Historic Places. However, it was closed down by the City of Independence in 1982 because it did not comply with city codes. Following the incident, Mary Mildred DeWitt donated the house and surrounding grounds to the City of Independence in February 1890. Goddamn. I can't talk. She donated the house and surrounding grounds to the City of Independence in February 1983. Mm-hmm. Tragically, she passed away less than a week after donating.
Oh, jeez.
That's crazy. The Victorian Society of the Vail Mansion DeWitt Museum held its inaugural meeting on May 15, 1983. Mrs. DeWitt belonged to the Independence chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution and the members of the chapter were highly involved and supportive during the formative years of the society. They made numerous donations and served on the society board. In 1983, the society recorded 139 charter members. Roger T. Sermon was the first president of the society and served until 1990. The first life member of the society were Roger T. Sermon and Mitchell Anderson. Even in the early days, the members of the society thought about the future, not just restoring the mansion to exemplify the beautiful Victorian style we see today, but raising funds to maintain the site for years to come.
Wow.
The life membership funds were earmarked for an endowment fund to secure the society's future. Shortly after the formation of the society, they started offering regular tours to visitors during the extensive renovations. Society members and city volunteers guided these tours. The first exhibit at the museum featured an assortment of items from the Dickens Museum in London. Later, unused items from the Kansas City Museum were also included in the exhibits. Society members spent the next two decades researching the mansion's original paint colors and design details in depth. The walls, molding, and murals have been restored to resemble the original as closely as possible.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. The society has raised over $1 million towards restoring and furnishing the mansion's interior through tours and fundraising events. The Strawberry Festival, which began as the Victorian Fancy Fair in 1985, is one such event.
Victorian Fancy Fair?
Yeah.
Strawberry Festival is a much better name.
In today's currency, the amount raised by the society is equivalent to about $2.8 million. The interior restoration project was made possible by the generous contributions of many friends of the DeWitts and historical preservation supporters in the area. They donated antiques, time, and expertise toward the project. Anyone interested can find a detailed list of the original mansion items sold at auction. The society acquires new acquisitions that match the list to replace pieces that may need to be more authentic.
Nice.
The Vail Mansion's grounds were officially recognized as a level 1 arboretum by the ArbNet Arboretum Program and the Morden Arboretum in April 2017. Don't know what that is.
Something to do with trees.
Probably. This designation made it one of only two properties in the country at that time that combined a historic mansion with a level 1 arboretum.
See, this is the difference between you and me, and this is why I can't do research. Because I will literally, I'll be doing my research, and then I'll come across, oh, what's an arboretum? And yeah. I'll start doing research on those. And then I'll go down an arboretum wormhole, and then, it'll something else, and something else, and something else. And that's why I never get down.
I just don't have time to go down these wormholes.
The fact that you can resist it is just...
I know, I just don't have
cannot time. Relate.
I know. The Missouri State Champion Smoke Tree, a Liberty Elm from the Elm Research Institute, and a stunning alley of 30 sugar maple trees arranged in two parallel rows of 15, embellished the grounds. I'm not sure where the smoke tree. I don't know.
On the grounds?
Yeah.
Somewhere?
Alan Branhagen's books, Native Plants of the Midwest and the Midwest Native Plant Primer, have featured several trees on the Vail grounds.
Hmm.
The Vail Mansion, DeWitt Museum, and Arboretum is an organization that operates as a nonprofit and aims to preserve, maintain, and present a historically significant Victorian era estate in Independence, Missouri. The organization is dedicated to comprehensively interpreting the Vail Mansion's architecture, interiors, landscape, and cultural history to ensure that this unique local landmark remains enjoyable for generations. I just wish I could talk today.
It's okay. I couldn't talk all day either.
All right. Now for the hauntings.
Woohoo!
Step inside the Vail Mansion and you'll be transported to a world where the supernatural and the everyday collide in a thrilling and spine-chilling way. This historic mansion is a hub for unexplained occurrences and is home to some of the most fascinating tales of the paranormal you'll ever hear. The Vail Mansion has everything from mysterious apparitions to unexplained sounds and smells. One of the most famous tales involves the ghostly apparition of a woman in a white dress, of course.
Uh-huh.
Visitors and staff members have reported seeing her wandering the halls or standing near windows.
Uh-huh.
Her presence both eerie and captivating. Could she be the ghost of Mrs. Vail herself or another woman connected to the mansion's history? The mystery surrounds her appearance only adds to the mansion's haunting allure. But the woman in white is not the only ghostly presence within the mansion's walls. Visitors have reported hearing unexplained footsteps, voices, and other eerie sounds throughout the building, adding to the overall sense of unease. Some guests have even experienced sudden drops in temperature, known as cold spots, in rooms with no apparent draft. The sensation of a ghostly presence is palpable in these moments, and it's enough to make even the bravest visitor feel uneasy. But that's not all. The Vail Mansion is also home to phantom smells, such as the scent of perfume or cigar smoke, that seem to come from nowhere. It's as if the mansion is alive with the lingering memories of its past inhabitants, and their presence can be felt in every corner of the building.
Mm-hmm.
Some witnesses have even experienced poltergeist-like phenomena, such as objects moving on their own, doors slamming shut, or lights flickering without any discernible cause. These occurrences are a reminder that the Vail Mansion is a place where the veil between the living and the dead is thin, and the spirits of those who once called it home still roam its halls. In short, the Vail Mansion is not for the faint of heart. It's a place where the supernatural seems woven into the very fabric of its existence, and the past and the present collide in a chilling and unforgettable way. Are you brave enough to step inside and experience the spine-tingling tales of the Vail Mansion for yourself?
So. Yeah.
Or would it make you afraid-ish?
I think it'd be okay. I didn't hear anything that was too...
Yeah.
I mean, it's just... I don't know, I'm kind of at the point where, like, dead people don't scare me as much as, like, alive people, so...
I know, yeah. It would be fun to visit there.
Yeah, it would.
All right. And that is my episode.
Woohoo!
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I think the next few episodes, I'm going to stick in the northwest part of Missouri.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of fascinating places that I found while researching this one.
Yeah.
Like, there's a president that used to live up there. Near Kansas City.
Okay.
Apparently his old house is haunted. And some of the hotels he stayed at.
Okay.
So that's pretty cool.
What president?
I said it earlier. We'll find out.
Okay.
I forgot. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Anyways. Do you have anything you want to...
No, I'm just tired.
Me too.
My weed's wearing off and it's making me sleepy.
Yeah, I'm trying not to cough through this whole thing.
Yeah, you're still struggling.
Yeah, it sucks.
It's like the main reason we haven't recorded is because you can't talk.
I'll say like a bullet point and then I'll have to stop and cough. It's crazy. It sucks.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get out of here.
Okie dokie.
If you have any stories or requests of anything you want to hear about or know anyone who does, please email me at afraidishpodcast@gmail.com, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at afraidishpodcast. Tell me what haunted location you want to hear about or any paranormal thing. Give me some personal stories. I would love to read some personal stories.
Yeah.
All the links will be in the show notes. I have this on YouTube as audio. You can listen almost anywhere you listen to podcasts. Rate and review on Apple Podcasts and rate on Spotify. 5 stars, please. You can now support this show with a small monthly donation to help sustain future episodes. The link for that will be in the show notes. I'll try to work on Patreon this year, hopefully. And I'm still working on some merch for the merch store. Trying to get the logo on the shirt a little smaller because it's kind of wide.
Yeah.
On the chest there. So, working on that. Yeah. And, send me some feedback on what kind of merch you want. Somebody did tell me they wanted to see some more, like, beer glasses or anything to do with liquor.
Yeah.
Like shot glasses and whatnot.
Okay. So,
I'll work on that.
Some tall boy glass or tall boy. Highball.
Highball.
Tall boy.
And I might throw a couple of coffee cups in there too.
Okay.
I like a nice 20-ounce coffee cup myself.
Yes, I know. Trust me, I know.
You just bought me a new one.
I did. Yeah, I was like, he's going to hate this.
No, I like it.
He's going to hate it. He's going to hate this coffee cup. He hates everything.
No. I like it.
I almost didn't buy it for you. I almost put it back and said, fuck him. He won't like it anyway.
Well, I like it. It's nice and big and I love it.
No, I know. I'm glad you like it because I did not think you were.
Yep. Anyway, until next time, don't be afraid of the dark.
Be afraid-ish of what's in it.
Bye.
Bye.
The mural was initially painted as a nude figure, which caused a scandal during its unveiling. Such a scandal.
They put porn in their bedroom.
There's no shame in that.
Oh, holy Jesus.